This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to today's Deep Dive. We've pulled together quite a stack of source material, all focused on the really big shifts happening in AI. And it all seems to center on just one day, September 22nd, 2025.
Yeah, it's pretty wild how much can drop at once.
Right. So our mission today, yours and mine, is to be your shortcut. We want to help you understand what the major players are actually building, maybe who's getting rich from all this, and also where the societal risks might be spiking, things you need to watch out for.
And what's really fascinating when you lay these sources out together is just the sheer breadth of it all. Yep. I mean, you've got efforts to set safety standards for like future superintelligence happening on the same day as news about building actual robots and, you know, brain chips.
Exactly.
So we really need to cut through that noise, connect the dots for you between these headlines that might seem, well, totally separate at first glance.
It really is a day of contrasts. So we'll dig into Google DeepMind's new safety framework. It's pretty stringent. Then there's OpenAI making this huge aggressive push into hardware, raiding Apple talent.
Yeah, that story is something else.
We've also got a pretty stunning AI music deal to talk about, and maybe most importantly, a worrying report on how people, maybe even you, are using AI for pretty critical advice.
Okay, sounds like a plan.
All right, let's unpack this. So let's start where the stakes feel, well, arguably the highest. That's the whole attempt to govern and, I guess, control powerful AI models. Google DeepMind just put out an update to their frontier safety framework, and they've added this specific new risk class. They're calling it harmful manipulation.
Yeah, and that term harmful manipulation, it's important. They're being very specific. This isn't just about, you know, standard deepfakes or misinformation campaigns we've seen before.
Right.
They're targeting the potential for these models to be systematically persuasive. Think about models that could actually change people's core beliefs during really high-stakes situations like elections or maybe a financial crisis.
Wow.
Just by being incredibly good at tailoring persuasive arguments to individuals, it's a different level of risk.
Yeah. And it's not just about persuasion, is it? DeepMind is also formally tackling what used to be, well, science fiction territory, misalignment risks.
Exactly. That's now officially in their rulebook. They're actually building protocols for a future scenario where an AI could actively resist human attempts to shut it down or, you know, change its fundamental programming.
That sounds intense. How do they plan to even monitor that?
Well, their proposed solution is it's ambitious. They plan to build an automated system to watch for what they call illicit reasoning.
Illicit reasoning.
Yeah, basically it's looking at the AI's internal chain of thought, its step-by-step processing to hunt for hidden, dangerous logic or intentions that a human might not spot just by looking at the output.
So spotting bad intentions before the AI acts.
That's the goal. Spotting malicious intent before it happens.
But, I mean, if we struggle to reliably detect hidden intentions in humans, how realistic is it to think we can build an automated system to spot illicit reasoning in a super advanced AI? That feels like a huge leap of faith technologically.
Oh, it absolutely is a leap. But I think they feel they have to start somewhere, right? Otherwise, public trust in them scaling these models even further just evaporates. It's almost an admission from them that, yes, this risk is real, and it's growing as the models get more powerful.
Okay.
Now, if we kind of shift gears slightly from controlling future superintelligence to controlling very powerful current algorithms, we see a related effort happening with governments.
Ah, you're talking about the TikTok situation, the algorithm control shifting in the U.S.
Exactly. That whole deal, the governance structure they're putting in place, it really shows how seriously governments are taking the power of these existing recommendation engines.
Yeah.
The deal basically mandates that Oracle, here in the U.S., will control and give us retrain the entire recommendation software from scratch.
I'll retrain it from scratch.
Yeah, using a leased version from ByteDance, but the learning, the tuning, happens entirely under Oracle's control inside the U.S.
That seems like an absolutely enormous task. I mean, monitoring code is one thing, but ripping out the engine and completely retraining it, what's the cost of that, computationally, financially, just to achieve that level of governance?
The cost must be astronomical, frankly. But it sets a major precedent, doesn't it?
Right.
This wasn't just about handing over code. It's a fundamental requirement. The algorithm's knowledge base, its future learning, it all has to be rebuilt on secure U.S.-based infrastructure.
Mm.
So Oracle manages all the future development. They monitor for any improper manipulation. And ByteDance's ownership stake in this new U.S. entity drops below 20%.
So this whole mechanism forcing a complex AI system to be relearned under new oversight, this could become the template, maybe, for handling powerful foreign algorithms globally.
It very well might. It's a new playbook for digital sovereignty, in a way.
Okay, so that's the race for control over the digital space, over algorithms. But our next set of developments points to a different kind of race, maybe even more expensive, the race for physical presence, for embodiment.
Mm.
And this puts OpenAI squarely in the spotlight. They seem to be making a really aggressive shift from just software to actually becoming a hardware company.
Aggressive is the right word. I mean, they are not just dipping a toe in the water here. They're doing a cannonball. The sources we have detail this massive, very well-funded hiring spree.
Okay.
And it's focused almost entirely on poaching talent from Apple's hardware teams.
Right. This isn't just hiring engineers. It sounds like they're trying to buy Apple's know-how wholesale.
Exactly. Buying institutional knowledge. We're talking dozens of veteran Apple hardware folks. Interface designers, audio engineers, manufacturing specialists.
And the price tag is steep. Packages reportedly hitting $1 million plus.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of investment is clearly designed to shortcut the incredibly painful learning curve that almost every software company hits when they try to ship actual physical products that, you know, work well and look good.
And who's leading this charge for them?
That would be Tang Tan, former top Apple executive. And apparently, part of his pitch to these recruits is something every Apple veteran probably dreams of. Less corporate red tape.
That's quite a pitch. So why is someone like Tang Tan so critical for this?
Well, he brings the Apple playbook, doesn't he? Especially on the supply chain and manufacturing side. They're not starting from zero, figuring out how to build things. They've apparently already lined up production partnerships with big players who make iPhones like Luxshare and Gore-Tek.
Wow, so they're skipping the startup phase entirely.
Pretty much. It's about fast-tracking the whole process, going from a prototype to potentially massive volume production. Some sources suggest they could be aiming for a market launch late 2026, maybe early 2027.
Okay, so what kind of product are we actually talking about? We heard Joni Ive's name mentioned, the former Apple design chief. That suggests a certain aesthetic, right? That old Apple playbook of minimalist design.
Ive's involvement definitely signals high ambition for the feel of the device.
Yeah.
Something intuitive, maybe beautiful. The actual initial products they're kicking around show that ambition. It's not just one thing. There's talk of a displayless smart speaker type device relying totally on voice.
Interesting.
But also maybe glasses, a wearable pen, even a dedicated voice recorder. The core idea seems to be creating this seamless, maybe screen-free interface to their AI.
But it's not just consumer gadgets, right? The embodiment push goes further. They're also diving deep into humanoid robotics at the same time.
That's the other, maybe even more ambitious side of embodiment. Their robotics division is expanding rapidly. You look at the job listings. We're seeking expertise in robotic control, advanced sensing, navigating the real world.
Mm.
They're openly aiming for, and I quote, AGI-level intelligence in dynamic, real-world settings. And their trademark application even specifically mentions user-programmable humanoid robots.
Okay, but why? Why the pivot to, you know, metal and motors? They're dominating the large language model space. Why spend potentially billions chasing hardware and robotics? The path to profit there seems much less obvious than selling API access.
It's a really good question. Professor Benjamin Lee had an interesting take on this in one of the pieces we read. He essentially argues it's a foundational research necessity for them.
How so?
Well, think about it. LLMs brought intelligence to text and code. Robotics is about bringing that intelligence into physical reality. The actual gains in understanding needed for AGI, things like physics, interaction, planning in a messy, unpredictable world, those gains might actually be greater from tackling robotics now, even more so than just scaling up language models further.
So it's less about immediate profit, more about planting a flag in the next big, difficult frontier of AI research.
Exactly. It's a strategic land grab for that next layer of AI application, the physical layer. Okay, let's pivot now. We've talked about control in physical bodies. Now let's look at two specific breakthroughs that really highlight the extremes of where AI progress is heading. One in just raw computational efficiency, the other in biological interfaces.
Right, the efficiency shockwave. That comes from xAI with their Grok 4 fast model. The descriptions use words like hyper-efficient, and the economic implications look, well, huge.
Huge is right. Grok 4 fast apparently delivers performance that's very close to the absolute frontier, the biggest models out there, but at a reported 98% price reduction compared to its predecessor, Grok 4.
98% cheaper? How?
Primarily through efficiency gains. The key metric is that it uses, on average, 40% fewer thinking tokens.
Okay, we hear tokens thrown around a lot. For listeners who know the basics, what does using 40% fewer thinking tokens actually mean for how the machine works?
It's a good question. It basically means they've drastically cut down the internal computational steps, the sort of internal back and forth the model needs to do before it gives you an answer. Imagine it needing fewer drafts or internal calculations.
So instead of taking the scenic route to find an answer, it's taking the direct highway.
Exactly. Much faster highway, which means lower latency, faster responses for the user, and critically, much lower operational cost for xAI to run it.
And crucially, this efficiency doesn't seem to have crippled its performance. The benchmarks are impressive. It's hitting 85.7% on GPQA Diamond. That's considered a really tough test of scientific reasoning.
Extremely tough.
And 92% on A2025, which is advanced math competition problems. It's actually beating the larger, more expensive Grok 4 in some areas.
Yeah, that's the kicker. It's not just cheaper, it's arguably better in some ways. This isn't just, you know, a nice engineering achievement. It's potentially a major market disruption. Well, think about it. If intelligence at this level suddenly becomes 98% cheaper overnight, what does that do to smaller AI companies competing mainly on API costs?
Right.
What does it do to the big cloud providers whose whole business model relies on renting out expensive AI computing power?
Right.
This is basically the definition of intelligence becoming too cheap to meter. It shifts from being a luxury good to potentially just basic infrastructure.
Okay, that's the pure computation side. Let's make a hard pivot now to the biological side. Neuralink. They had a pretty major announcement about their clinical trial progress.
Yeah, huge news from them too. They're apparently gearing up for a clinical trial set to start in October for a device aimed at restoring speech.
Speech restoration? How?
The goal is to allow nonverbal individuals to communicate again by directly decoding the brain signals associated with imagined speech, turning thoughts, essentially, into audible words or text on a screen. They've already received FDA breakthrough designation for this specific application.
The pace there just feels extraordinary over the last year or so.
It really has been unprecedented. I mean, just think about the timeline they've hit. The first human implant was only back in January 2024.
Right.
The second one followed just 8 months later. They got breakthrough designation for their BlindSight Vision project in September 2024. And then, remember that video shared by the first recipient, Brad Smith, back in May?
Yeah, the nonverbal recipient who was controlling a computer, writing.
Exactly. He showed he could create content, edit it, even narrate it, purely using his thoughts captured by the Neuralink device. The speed they're moving at, from basic cursor control for paralyzed individuals to potentially restoring complex functions like speech, it's just an enormous leap, both technologically and, frankly, ethically.
Definitely raises profound questions alongside the potential benefits.
Yeah, that does.
Okay, so moving from brain chips to the billboard charts, we also need to look at how AI is impacting culture and maybe making some people quite wealthy very fast. Case in point, this AI artist, Xenia Monet, just landed a reported $3 million record deal.
Yeah, this is a big moment, I think. A real confirmation of AI's arrival in the mainstream cultural economy. Now, Monet was created by a human poet, Talisha Jones.
Okay.
And while the underlying music was generated using Suno AI, Jones is careful to emphasize that she writes all the original lyrics herself and adds what she calls live elements, trying to maintain that human creative ownership.
But the results are clearly resonating. 10 million streams in the U.S. debuting on Billboard charts that led Hollywood Media to offer this multi-million dollar deal.
Right. And it's not an isolated incident. This follows the signing of another prominent Suno creator in Molliver just a few months back.
Yeah.
It seems the music industry, or at least parts of it, have decided that, you know, while the legal battles over copyright rumble on.
The smart move is to sign the talent, human or AI assisted, that's actually getting traction.
Exactly. Monetize the high quality, high volume creativity that these tools are enabling. It suggests the output quality has reached a point where many consumers just don't care that much about the synthetic origin as long as they like the song. But, and this is a crucial but, while AI seems to be rapidly mastering creative fields like music, its push into areas requiring high-stakes personal advice. That's painting a much, much less harmonious picture. We absolutely have to pivot now to this really quite stark report from Pearl.ai about advice seeking.
Yeah, this report felt like a huge warning flare, a warning for you listening right now about how AI might be getting misused in really critical decisions. The headline stat, 40% of Americans surveyed said they use AI weekly for advice on serious topics.
Weekly?
Yeah, we're talking medical questions, financial planning, even legal advice.
And this isn't just theoretical usage. That level of trust is leading to documented negative consequences. Mm-hmm. The specific numbers in the report are frankly alarming. 22% said they followed AI medical advice that was later proven to be wrong.
Wow.
19% reported losing money because they followed bad AI financial advice.
19% loss. But the stat that really jumped out at me, the one that underlines just how much misplaced trust there might be, 31% said they would let an AI lawyer defend them in court.
Yeah. Defend them in court. That's a staggering level of faith to place in a system that fundamentally doesn't grasp the consequences of failure in that context.
Right.
Like, that disconnect was captured really well by the Pearl CEO, Andy Kurtzik. He had this powerful quote saying, AI's defining weakness right now is its confidence without certainty.
Confidence without certainty.
Exactly. It creates what he calls an illusion of expertise. He argues we're being sold tools that can mimic authority incredibly well, but they haven't actually earned it through real-world understanding or accountability. And that creates this structural safety gap in pretty much every high-stakes field AI touches.
So what's the proposed solution? The report doesn't say ban it, right? It talks about maintaining a hybrid intelligence. Mm. Blending AI's accessibility, which is undeniable, with the wisdom and verification of a human expert. But here's my question. In a pinch, in an emergency, or just when someone wants a quick, cheap answer, if 40% of people are already turning to AI weekly for this stuff, how do we actually enforce a hybrid model? Isn't the temptation just too great to take the instant AI answer and skip the human check?
That is the absolute core challenge here. You can't really enforce human oversight on an individual level easily. But what you can potentially do is mandate verification and change how these tools are presented and integrated.
How so?
The solution might lie in the industry itself and perhaps regulators, shifting the marketing and framing. Not selling these tools as doctors or lawyers, but as incredibly powerful research assistants that must be paired with verified human credentials for high-stakes advice. The responsibility perhaps falls back on institutions, hospitals, law firms, financial advisors to integrate AI in a way that explicitly checks its plausible-sounding confidence against actual human certainty and expertise.
So building the human check into the professional workflow rather than relying on the end user to seek it out.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
It's about managing that illusion of expertise proactively.
Okay, we have covered a massive amount of ground today. We've seen these extreme ends of AI progress, really. From DeepMind trying to put guardrails on future superintelligence and Oracle trying to control today's powerful algorithms to OpenAI's huge bet on physical hardware and robots, we saw computational models like Grok 4Fast becoming almost unbelievably cheap, potentially ubiquitous.
Right.
And then the profound, maybe slightly unsettling, rapid acceleration of biological interfaces with Neuralink.
And if you try and tie it all together, there's this really clear tension running through everything we discussed today, isn't there?
Uh-huh.
Grok 4Fast showed us that raw computational intelligence, the ability to process information and find patterns, is getting incredibly cheap, maybe even functionally free soon.
Yeah, intelligence too cheap to meter.
Exactly. But then, that Pearl.ai report on advice seeking showed us something crucial. The human cost of actually trusting that free intelligence, especially when you apply it blindly to really high-stakes decisions like your health or your finances or legal matters, that cost is still incredibly high, potentially devastatingly high.
Which really brings us to the essential question, the one that maybe you, listening, need to be thinking about right now.
When the price of just accessing basic information or getting a quick analysis drops essentially to zero, how do we, as individuals and as a society, correctly assign value to verified human expertise, to actual wisdom, to judgment, to certainty? What steps do you need to take personally and professionally to make sure you're getting reliable guidance, getting that certainty, and not just falling for that very convincing illusion of expertise that AI delivers with so much confidence? That's the challenge, I think, for all of us navigating this landscape as it evolves so quickly.